You're listening to the Saturday Morning D&D Show with Jordan, the PH is Silent, and Sir Lucian. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Saturday Morning RPG Show. My name is Jordan, with a silent PH in the middle. And I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Sir Lucian, over at Sir Lucian Gaming. Welcome. We're back. How are you doing,
Lucian? We're still here. Alive.
I guess, yeah, like, we're back on the internet.
Jordan's been around, but the show is here. It's been a bit Saturday morning to talk about one of our favorite hobbies ever, role-playing games and all of the role-playing games we have. I was looking at my Kickstarter before we get to all of our notes, and I was going through, like, seeing which ones I'd got and which ones maybe I hadn't got yet. And then I was just going through the list, and I'm looking at the numbers, $50 here, $77. But it was like, I was looking at this big list of Kickstarters, and I realized I'm a Kickstarter junkie, so I might have to at some point join an anonymous junkie for Kickstarters. I don't know about you, but I've spent a lot of money on Kickstarters.
No, I stopped in 2023. I think I did probably one Kickstarter so far, but like I was like, I got to cut back. This is ridiculous. But I did just get the...
I saw a picture,
Yeah, it's called Home. It came yesterday, and it's a haunted house map-making RPG, and it's card-based. There's no dice, but like you kind of make a character, and then you go into the house, and then there's a marker, and you're supposed to draw the house out, and you have cards that flip over that tell you things. It kind of feels like Alice is Missing, but I think that's just because of the card aspect. It's definitely like a short-term story game. But I loved the idea of building the haunted house and then playing it in a different system, like Kids on Bikes or something. Mm-hmm, I thought that would be kind of cool. So that finally arrived, and I've been sitting on that. I think that was supposed to be delivered like summer of last year. So that's cool. And then... it was supposed to get here yesterday, but it will now get here Tuesday, is Mothership, which is going to be really cool to have that. I mean, I've already had the PDFs, but like, I like my box of stuff, so.
Absolutely. And yeah, it was that picture that made me go and look at mine, because I'm thinking, oh, I wonder what I'm still waiting for. I always think of it as like Kickstarter Christmas also. You never know when it's going to hit.
That's why I'm always like, happy Kickstarter Fulfillment Day, because like, it's like, I don't know, it just randomly happened. And I was really excited. But no, I still have quite a few. And then I was just reading this morning. There was something came on my radar of a game, and you'll probably like this, Lucian, but it's called Fabula Ultima, and it's the tabletop JRPG. It won two Ennies for best. Oh, what is it? It's here somewhere. It won two Ennies for like best game in 2023 and best setting. Gold for best game and silver for product of the year. And I was like, well, that looks kind of cool. They have a free preview that you can download. Here, I'll put this in the chat, in both Lucian chat and Jordan chat. Yeah.
The one I was checking, I remember we did a show with the Dungeon Denzians, and I ordered the 5e Reptile skin cover. So I'm still waiting for that one.
But no, I'm waiting for that too. And I have a monster in that book.
yeah, perfect. And then the other one I was waiting for is that the one that still is really cool, Historica Arcanum, Era of the Crusades. That's my other big one. I bought their big collector set box. It got everything. And I'm like, those are my two that I still have out there that I'm waiting on. So. Yep.
Grinar says that he's played this Fabula Ultima, and it looks really cool. Like, something I like about this game that I think was interesting is that you have four stats, and they each have a die value, so like a D10 or a D6. Mm-hmm. But pretty much everything in the game is roll two different stats. So you're like, okay, I'm like stabbing at him with my daggers. And they're like, all right, roll dex and might, you know? So you roll those two die together. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool, because it really opens up with, I want to like block with my magic. Okay, roll like might and magic. And I was like, oh. So, you know, and it always surprises me, because you think that everything's been written in the world of tabletop, like, or of dice mechanics, but then
there's no new
stuff. Yeah, but then there's stuff like this where I'm like, that feels new, and it's kind of cool.
Yeah, at least new to us, or like we hadn't heard of it yet. But I love like you dive into so many different dice mechanics because you've tried, you know, 12s and 6s and 10s. And, you know, it's like, I'm going to look at them all. What can you do? And I story dice and different dice that do different things. And then having all the dice represent something and you grab those. And I love the idea of grabbing that and just playing around with them. And I was even Matt Colwell has been talking a lot about dice and how, what they're doing with theirs. And so it is interesting to see. 2D6 still seems to be the big popular kind of mechanic that everybody's been going to, but I like that other people are still playing with different ones, D12s, D6,
let's jump ahead really quick because we're already talking about that. But like, so Critical Role is 2D12, and that, and again, this is all could change, but Daggerheart, they're kind of playing around with that system. But it's not 2D12 like Powered by the Apocalypse 2D6 where you add them together. It's like, you can succeed with both, but one could be a bad success or one could be a good success. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. So, you know, what it's called, like Hope and something. I don't know. I haven't actually
read the playbook. Hope and Bane, or Woe, Hope and Woe,
something like that. And so it's like, I succeed with my bad die, so I succeed at a cost kind of a thing, which is a Powered by the Apocalypse kind of idea. And then I was reading a fun article and they were like comparing and contrasting Daggerheart with the MCDM RPG. And even after reading that, they were like, okay, here's kind of the different ways that they're doing it. And Daggerheart kind of feels like it's playing safe because I think they want to replace 5e at their main stage table. Like the game isn't necessarily going to make them a whole bunch of money, but they're going to be able to have this like in-house product that they can advertise and it'll better suit the style of game they want to play is kind of my takeaway from it. We'll see, you know, who knows. But then Colville, it was like, oh, they're doing 2D6 and you add them together. But then I just watched Colville's stream like a couple days ago and he said that James was like, we have to make it a D8. I think we have to make it a D8. And he's like, well, let's just make it a D10. So now it's 2D10 to add it together. Like that game has changed so much. I remember at the very beginning, they were like, yeah, we're going to have these weird symbols on the die and you'll roll them to see if you're like successful. But like every time they get together and play, like, so much changes. And then you have the nostalgia people that are, you know, Kobold Press is still doing a D20. A lot of people are really enjoying and playing Shadow Dark, and that's a D20, you know. But yeah, as I'm studying more and more game mechanics, I'm kind of like, you know, and I'm playing Plangea, which is 5e, and I haven't played 5e in a long time. I'm like, you know what? To hit is kind of annoying. Like you're like, I missed. I'm gonna do this, you know.
So big misses. And it is interesting too that they're willing, MCDM, which they've been having lots of videos lately, they're willing to really throw something out that worked Hope and pretty fear. Well, whereas a lot of companies might have said, well, it's working 85% of the time, so we should keep it. But Matt's always like, if it just doesn't feel right or there's one little aspect about it, he's just like, nope. Throw that out. Let's keep looking for what we're going to do because he's just looking. So I like that they're willing to challenge their own ideas, challenge their own assumptions of it, play it out and see what they like about it. Because no to hit, there are some games out there that do that where you're just rolling damage. Everybody hits, you know, and that's an interesting game where there is no, I don't hit my hero, my champion out there is never missing, you know. It's just we're hitting each other and who's gonna last longer. We're both hitting each other. The monsters are hitting, they're hitting, you know.
I started thinking about that for modular D6 that I've still been working on, and the idea of I like the idea of a monster will hit me and I roll my defensive and then I have armor that absorbs damage. So like the monster could technically hit me for 3, but I evade 2 and my shield absorbs 1, so I take no damage. Like I kind of like that idea because it really feels like, to me it feels, I guess when your armor class is 15 and they roll a 14 and it's like, oh, I almost got hit, but the way I described it previously feels more like I dodged out of the way, but thank God I have a shield kind of a thing. Whereas I don't feel like, I mean, you might be like, oh, my armor class is 14 because it's 12 plus a shield in 5e, but like it doesn't have that same kind of effect, I guess. Something else interesting from that MCDM stream is he was saying how much James wants to have the game master not roll dice. And I like that a lot.
Well,
like
that's the Monty Cook thing, right?
And that, and that's because of Monty Cook and things. And I just, I think that's really cool. Like, no, because the challenge is this hard and it makes it easier on the game master. But he had some really good points where he's like, no, I want the game master to feel like they're playing in the same game. They should be able to roll dice. And I was like, oh, that's fair. Like, I didn't, it's kind of funny. Like, I don't think about it like that sometimes, but. Anyway, we'll just talk about Matt's stream.
That's what we do now. Well, we're definitely all big fans of his, and I can't wait to see the system. I'm glad they're showing us snippets of it. And I do like going back to some of the other systems that are out there, like Daggerheart and all these ones that are getting released by other people too. I've been noticing, not only tying into what you're talking about, they've been showing up on D&D Beyond as far as if you want to learn these systems, you can go and see some of these systems over on some of the other platforms, but also the Nexus one that is done with Demiplane. Yeah. It has a couple of those games. So if you're like, I don't know what the rules are, but you want a website that's already filled out to help you create characters and look up rules, just like you have with D&D Beyond and Dungeons and Dragons, you can go over there and they've got the Pathfinder stuff's up now, the Starfinder stuff's up now, they've got several of these other games that are kind of out in play tests and are out, and like Candelabra Obscura is on there. I saw, you know, so it's a good time that if you want to dabble in them and, you know, have your table try them out, there's websites out there to help you quickly look up rules and try to figure those things out, which is
I think Demiplane will be huge coming up.
I'm thinking, yeah,
because it's got a D&D Beyond feel. Offense to Roll20. Roll20 covers a lot of these games as well, but Demiplane has the more like splashy kind of feel to it for obvious reasons, because it's made by Adam Branford. It's gonna be like a home for a whole bunch of different types of games, whereas D&D Beyond will always just be 5e. They're never gonna be like play Pathfinder here, you know. That just doesn't make sense. So
or 5.5 or whatever. We still haven't seen a name for what kind of next version of Dungeons and Dragons is, we've been gone a while and we still haven't seen anything back. If you go back to some of the older shows, the things we were talking about is, hey, they're about to talk about what the next version of Dungeons and Dragons 5 is, whether it's 5.5 or 6 or whatever they were going to call it. I still haven't seen anything definitive. That basically the only thing I've ever seen is 2024, you know, so it's Dungeons and Dragons 2024 I saw in some of the advertisements. So we still haven't seen too much on that.
And I think that's what they want to call it, is 2024, but there was even a lot of talk is like, do you think it's going to come out in 2024? And everyone's kind of like, it
could get pushed. Yeah.
It might not. Who knows? you know, like anything's possible. And then it's like the 2025 edition. And you're right. Like a lot of people are like, oh, they'll call it 5.5. Well, Wizards will want to call it D&D. They don't want to give it an edition. They just want it to be like, Monopoly is Monopoly, and then there's the Jurassic Park edition of Monopoly. There's this, like, that's what Hasbro wants. They don't want you to think about editions. But the truth is that editions matter, because the game drastically changes. And even from 3 to 3.5, it was a drastic change, you know? So we'll see. But the fans will call it this, because the fans will say, hey, do you want to come over and play Dungeons and Dragons? And somebody will be like, oh, I've only played 5e, or what are you playing? They're like, oh, we're playing the new one. It's like 5.5. You'll be fine. Oh, okay, cool. You know, it's like, it's similar enough that you could just jump in and you're like, oh, cool. Yeah. Otherwise, it'll be like, actually, it's 6th edition because, you know, we all play underwater octopuses in this one, and you're going to have to learn how to do 8 things at once. And you're like, oh,
yeah.
Like, I think I'll stick with 5th edition. So.
Makes sense. And their big push, which I've noticed too, like they kind of went a little dark, just like we went a little dark over a few months there, where it wasn't a lot of videos getting released. And then all of a sudden it's been Vecna, Vecna, Vecna here for a bit. Yeah. So that seems cool. We all love Vecna, right?
I mean, Vecna's cool. This is going to be fun. I wonder if they're, I don't know. We'll see what they do with Vecna. Obviously I've been following the Vecna train for a while now. And following it so closely, it feels anticlimactic because like this book's coming out and I'm like, they would never be able to do this. But part of me is like, I wanted them to all of these little locations that were seeded to actually go back to some of those little locations, like the obelisks and stuff. But I don't think that will be the case. I think it will be, it'll be just another adventure with like maybe some loose tie-ins. But in my mind, I was like, that would be really cool if they were like, at this point of the game, you get teleported back. And then maybe if you've played through Out of the Abyss, all of a sudden you could be like, you teleport in and you see your old characters there performing whatever task and you have to help them, or, you know, like you kind of change history in some way. But again, that's like I don't even know how I would program or not program. Yeah, you would need to be on a computer.
Run it.
I don't even know how I would try to facilitate that when everybody's games are different and everybody's, you know, stuff is different. But
yeah.
But Vecna Eve of Ruin
is tie-in, though, because it has been something that's been a mystery that they put in so many spots. Yeah. To finally have that payoff tie-in to say, here's what it is, here's how they got there, here's what they're doing. Yeah.
It'll be nice. It'll be good, I think. And I don't know. I want to run it. I probably should run it on stream. So maybe this'll be my like, hey guys, let's just run this. Because sadly, the Great Modron March, like, we just can't get our schedules to align. And so I'm like, I don't know if we're gonna be able to play that anymore. And rightfully so, a lot of those guys were like, well, I'm gonna start doing this, you know. And so Ted's now streaming two different games, and LB's doing like whatever LB does. Like, she's got a million streams.
Always streaming
every
something.
Week.
Yeah, yeah.
And doing all kinds of different games and video games. And then me and Lex have been working on stuff, and so it's just kind of like, I don't know, guys, you know. And I think it's like we could make it work maybe like Sunday mornings, but like nobody's like, I don't want to. Like, I'm gone most of the weekends. And I was like, oh, yeah, I hear that. Or, like, weekends is for family and things like that. I was like, yeah, so. Yeah. But running Vecna Eve of Ruins, speaking of that, I didn't realize it's coming out May 16th, which is really close.
Pretty cool.
There should be all kinds of preview stuff coming out beginning of May of, like, people who get the actual stuff. I could do a one-shot with Discord folks. You're right, Shozama. I should. Yes.
I've done Discord.
I should do
fans
a Discord
back in
Eve of Ruin. We could work on that. Or that Drow Patreon game everybody's been talking about. We should do that
too. That's true too.
But it comes out May 16th, so we should be getting a lot more information soon. The levels are 10 to 20, which is the first 20 level. Dungeon of the Mad Mage with 20th level, I think. That one went to 20th, yeah. But it's kind of cool. You're going to all these different areas. So I think you're going to start in the Forgotten Realms. They did say in a video that you're going to go to Ravenloft. And you are going to go to Eberron, specifically in the Mornland, which is kind of cool because they've statted out the Mornland a little bit.
Mysterious.
But like, it is really crazy. And then you're going to go to Dragonlance. And I think they said a Spelljammer is worked in there at some point. So we'll see. But
kind of tie in the multiverse at that point and all the planar existing worlds. Yeah, very cool.
So, and Vecna is trying to become more than a god. So it makes me think there's time travel shenanigans. I think he's going to go back in time and try to, like, prevent the gods from being created or, you know, I don't know, something like that. But
There was a teaser trailer I saw that talked about, and it said, what are you willing to give up for power? And then it shows his eye, and then it shows his hand, and he's like, I'm willing to give up all that for power. And then it kind of zooms out to him, and it's like, yeah, he's striving for lots of power, and how he's going to get it will be interesting.
Remake the world, yeah. So it'll be cool. Like, I mean, Vecna's just such a fun character. I'm excited to see the stat block at the very least. Like, I think it'll be great. And it's going to coincide with Stranger Things. I mean, I think this is going to blow up real big, so.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think it's one of their better bad guys of all. I think it's one of the most known for the large community that have played Dungeons and Dragons from if you played in the 70s and then never came back, you still heard of it. If you played in the 80s and you never came back, you still heard of it. If you played in the 90s, you know, so
well,
it's like one
it's
that just really spanned well.
I think it's the name that's tied to the magic
it's
item.
It's just so good.
You know, because you have the eye in the hand of Vecna, and the other, like, notorious monster I think of is Orcus, and it's because of the Wand of Orcus. And I was like, you know, and Tiamat is very well known, but like, if there was like the, I don't know, flail of Tiamat, I think I think that would be also more well known. You know, I think there's the crown of Tiamat now or something, but it's the fact that these magic items persisted before the villain did for a long time, which is kind of cool. So,
very cool.
So that'll be really awesome. Quests of the Infinite Staircase, which I like the anthology ones, and then I especially like the anthology ones of older adventures. So I was actually excited for this. It's kind of funny because I have, well, we could talk a little bit about Goodman Games with this, but they're going to release, what is it, 6 different adventures in Quest from the Infinite Staircase. And that's the next book, which is July 16th. And then I think that's the end of the fifth edition run. And the next book is PHB 2024, which will be October. And I think they're releasing all three at the same time. Monster Manual, blah, blah, blah. So we'll see. I like Quest from the Infinite Staircase. The Lost City is a classic. And so here's the Goodman Games drama with this, which was kind of cool. Goodman Games got the rights from Wizards of the Coast to reprint a lot of these for their the big anthology books that they were doing. Yeah, because you have
Temple of Elemental Evil.
Yeah, Temple of Elemental Evil. So The Lost City was the first one they did. And then there was like Against the Giants and Castle Amber and a couple others and stuff. But The Lost City and Expedition to the Barrier Peaks, specifically those two. Well, now they're not allowed to sell them. They're not allowed to print more. Like, it's all just like revoked. It's done. You're not allowed. So whatever's out there is out there. And because of that, The Lost City, because collectors, I mean, gamers are going to collect, The Lost City jumped to like $300 on eBay for a used copy. And I was
My game store had all of them, all the ones they had done. And Lost City was in there. That was a good
I one. Was like, oh, because I immediately, when I saw that, I'm like, what? So I ran to my game store and I looked and they didn't have any of them. And I was like, oh. So then I looked online. I'm like, yeah, you don't have them here either. But I do have Expedition to the Barrier Peaks, thanks to Lex. He bought me that as like a birthday present. And so that was really cool. And
that's
then
nostalgia. That's my favorite one, because that's one that I played way back in the day and in AD&D. So that's such an exciting one to have them bring back into 5e version.
So the cool thing about these, though, is they are more of a collector edition because they have the 5e conversion, but then they have the original scans of the original thing. So it's kind of fun to be able to look through and be like, oh, wow, like you get basically two books in one. And with Temple of the Elemental Evil, it was like, I mean, it is physically two books because it's just
full
so
books.
Goodman Games is continuing this, though, because they just released the Dark Tower, which is not a Wizards of the Coast property. So I Goodman Games sent me a copy of the Dark Tower for review, and I haven't done it yet.
Nice.
Sorry, I'm working on it. But they sent me not only the 5e games, but they were able to convert it for DCC because it's not Wizards of the Coast, so they didn't have those stupid contracts. So there's a DCC version of the Dark Tower, and then the next one is going to be Thracia. Caverns of Thracia, I think is what it's called, which is another non-Wizards of the Coast, very famous Judges Guild adventure that they'll release. So that should be fun.
I like it because they're very historical parts of it too. Like, if you want to know the history of how it was published, how it was made, who was involved, what were the ideas, what did it look like in its original forms and all that stuff, they did a great job of giving you not only the history of the adventure, but then giving you, all right, now you want to play it in a modern 5e setting. Here you go. Here's all the rules. We did all the work for you for that too. So it's cool.
And it's the original art. And, you know, Quest from the Infinite Staircase will have updated art and a lot of other stuff. And I was like, and that's fun and cool. So I just thought it was interesting that Goodman Games was kind of like, yeah, we're going to do this. And they're like, and we can't anymore. And I was like, oh, because there's got to be hundreds of these that they would love to do. Like,
yeah, remember all those booklets? There's just so many ones you can choose and that you could dive deep into and then redo for sure. I love the Temple Elemental Evil one. I still read it a lot, even though I've read it all the way through twice now.
I still want to run through that so bad with Old School Essentials. I think that would be just like, okay, guys. But then, you know what? I've never heard of anyone who's finished Temple of Elemental Evil. It's too big.
No.
Like, people say, oh my God, that's too big.
Yeah.
So then YouTube, D&D YouTube is going to blow up when those 2024 books come out. So be prepared. The other big news, and this was something I wanted to touch on, not because I hate Cynthia Williams by any means, but Cynthia Williams resigned as president of Wizards of the Coast. Well, the thing I wanted to bring this up, because a lot of people are just like, she ruined D&D and she's trying to do this and she did such a bad job at Hasbro. Look at her leave with her tail between her legs. And I wanted to be the voice of reason and say, you know what? A lot. She might be a very fine person. She did say those things that she thinks D&D is undermonetized. That is a very like corporate kind of structure.
Corporate, yeah, very corporate.
But which I'm not excusing or anything. But I do want to say, like, you know, a lot of people quit for a lot of reasons, and a lot of those are personal. Like, her spouse could have cancer. She could be like, I've got this, you know, I'm stepping down for reasons that are not like I've disappointed the D&D community. Like, I don't think it's that, or not even disappointed the D&D community, but like I've let the shareholders down. Like, I think they, you know, there's just personal reasons that she might have left. So I was we should have just...
They had record years. The shareholders are loving her.
Well, yeah, they did lay off a bunch of people and things like that. So, yeah, but I just kind of wanted to touch on that. But she did resign. They don't have a president right now. They still have a CEO, which is Chris Cox. Like, he's CEO of Hasbro. Yeah. It's just the division of Wizards doesn't have stuff.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Magic is still making money. D&D is still fine. They're licensing out all this stuff to Lego, and they're making shoes.
The movie did great.
Well, the movie didn't do good financially, but it was a good movie.
I think it was well received, though. Yeah. Right. I never think it's the person. It's always there's a marketing department that made some bad decisions, and that brought a lot of bad stuff onto the company. But they also have corporate goals which don't quite align to the community goals of this cooperative role-playing game that we all love, and that just clashes. And I get that. So I don't ever think anybody's, you know, super evil. I just think, you know, they have different priorities and they don't always align with what ours are. But, you know, we can speak and we have the power of the wallet, and the wallet is what makes those corporates, you know, kind of sit up. So it's not about going out on a Twitter and talking about it, or, you know, or making a bunch of those videos, which I think work, but I think it's really, if you want to hurt any of those corporations and you do it with your dollars, you go and you spend that money on people that you think you want to support. So all those indie developers, Goodman Games, Monty Cook, they got a lot of my dollars because I like what they were doing. And that's where a lot of my money went. So it wasn't so much, I think there's anything wrong with any specific.
And people did say, you know, whether the OGL thing was her idea or not, like the fact that so many people canceled their D&D Beyond subscriptions, and subscriptions are key to profit now. Everything's like, do you want a coffee subscription company? Everything's subscription because they know that they can get recurring stuff. And I think that was the big thing where they were like, oh, this is a lot scarier than we thought, you know.
Speak with your wallet. That's all I can say.
Another reason for the OGL debacle and stuff, or another consequence of it, is that we're getting third-party content on D&D Beyond, which is kind of cool. Kobold Press has some monster books up there. The Dungeon Dudes were first. They have their campaign setting, I believe. And then Critical Role obviously has stuff there. So the cool thing, though, is Critical Role has stuff there, but then they also have all of that same stuff over on, like, Demiplane and things like that. And I think the Dungeon Dudes are also going to put their stuff on Demiplane. So that's cool because I can buy it where I want it. I still am waiting for the – honestly, I just want a PDF. Like, it comes down to, like, I don't think Wizards of the Coast will ever do a PDF, but, like, when I buy something, I want to have a PDF of it so that I can incorporate it into whatever website thing I want, you know. But they know that you'll use D&D Beyond, and I am proof of that because I still have a D&D Beyond subscription because I needed access to the artwork to make my lore videos, you know, and I can't get the access to the artwork even though I own the book. Unless I take high-res screens of the pages, but I don't have time for that. So,
hey, I was looking up level 7 cleric spells just the other day on D&D Beyond. I'm still using it. Probably not as I don't use it as much as my subscription is. You know, like I feel like I pay that, and it's like, boy, I only really look something up once a month or so. Is that really a good cost value? But man, the convenience of being able to look up and filter through things, I just do love those conveniences. What, no matter it's Demi playing or them or whoever's, you know, roll 20 or whatever we happen to be using to look that info up.
So because we have so many third party things happening in my Plangea game, and everybody's like fine with not using D&D Beyond, except I have one player who is like, well, I've only ever played on D&D Beyond. And I'm like, okay, well, you're playing a dinosaur person. That dinosaur person isn't in D&D Beyond. And he's like, oh, well, I'll just be an orc. Is that similar enough? And I shrug my shoulders. I'm like, I don't know. Like, it's really funny because he won't use paper. Like, I'm like, here's your character sheet. And he just kind of like pushed it to the side and he won't. He only likes D&D Beyond. And those are the kind of players that I think Wizards of the Coast really wants. Is, well, if it's in D&D Beyond, I'll be able to use it. And I'm like, well, it's not. Well, I don't want to use it then. And it's like, well, that's sad because this is really cool. And so there are things that I've done, like they all got like a blessing from a ancient spirit that gives them a D10 they can add to any roll once per session. And they love that. But he's like, where do I track that? And I'm like, well, you don't, because it's not on D&D Beyond. But like on your character sheet, you could write like really cool dice Jordan gave me checkbox, you know. And I don't know. I love paper. Things like Pathfinder, and I'm playing in a Forbidden Lands game now, too. We'll get to that. But like there are online tools that I love where I can like build a character and then print it out. But I still want to go to the table with, like, paper. I don't know. That's me. Like, I got really tired of just playing. Everybody would open our laptops in my old 5e game, and we'd all just, like, play on 5e. And I'm like, I just want to, I don't know. I want to play on paper. And it's because of third-party stuff that I think that's really cool. And D&D Beyond, I think, is recognizing that, which is why they're like, oh, you can now use Cold War Press books, and you can do this. And it's like, oh, cool.
I still love I'd be that player that I put all my characters in roll 20 because you can customize stuff. So even if they don't have it, I can build my own ability and I have all the spots where I can put all the
You're also,
that I need.
You know it enough.
And I can
to
hit
do
the
that.
Dice. Right? Yeah. Like I'm into it enough. So that's why.
But
I
he's
love
not
it.
Into it enough to build it in D&D Beyond. So he was like, well, can you do it? And I was like, no. Like, A, I could, but B, I don't have time for that. And I'm going to run a game. So I'm not going to build things for you in D&D Beyond. I'm sorry. but that's still having funny. A lot of fun with that game. It's really awesome.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just, the more I play, the more I'm like, there's a magic to pen and paper. So, for sure. Critical Role MCDM. We kind of already talked about that. They're working on stuff. Candela Obscura over at Demiplane.
Yep.
Yeah. OSR news. The only one I really knew of was the Cairn 2 Kickstarter, which has 5 days to go. So if you are into Cairn, this is more or less the same game, a few tweaks, but I think Cairn Second Edition is just like an expanded Game Master section. Like, because Cairn itself is like 15 pages, very, very small. Cairn 2E will be like a box set. You know, if you're a fan of Cairn, here's this. which I did play one Cairn game that Lex ran. And I had a good time, but it's one of those where I played it and I'm like, this is not the system for me. Like, I thought it would be really, I thought this would be kind of like, oh, this is cool, it's Cairn. But the more I was like, no, I just, it's not what I want. But other people love it, you know, like Bob Willibilder still talks about it all the time. And obviously I'm not saying it's bad by any means. Like, it is a great game. I just was like, I don't think this is the fantasy that I wanted as much, you know. But I really value Cairn and the author Yokai in general for his game design thoughts. Like, if you listen to his podcast, which I totally recommend, I'm going to recommend a different podcast than the one you're listening to, but they have Between Two Cairns where they review stuff. But the best part of Between Two Cairns is when they just get on tangents about game design and like, what does it mean to roll dice and does system matter? And I'm like, oh, this is interesting. Let's listen in on this. So, he has very interesting thoughts on like art dungeon crawling and game design as a whole, and it's really
does he do it in the Between Two Ferns kind of mentality where he asks a really awkward and
No.
Question of his guess.
Yeah, it's not really, no.
Okay.
There is they general like the banter name. Back they and just, forth, but like, yeah. I think it was just a clever name. But yeah, it's called Between Two Carrots.
Yeah, I heard you you don't pay your taxes. What? Yep. What?
Between Two Ferns is good. Quite funny, though. So. but yeah.
And I have seen that around quite a bit. That's one that's been quite popular. OSR is still running pretty big, and you know everybody's. I think they had their biggest year. I think somebody was. I saw a video. I thought where they were showing.
Yeah, Ben Milton was saying that the OSR has continually grown, whereas on Kickstarter, whereas D&D dipped down. But I don't know if that counted backer kit and a lot of other things, you know. And they did lump in things like Mothership into the OSR, which people are like, well, that's not really the OSR, and. And who knows, though, because I've talked with Lex.
It is OSR.
With Lex, and I'm like, well, I thought that was OSR. And he's like, that's not OSR. So nobody even knows, really. Like, or I should say it's different for different people because there isn't a corporation behind it. You know, you don't have Wizards of the Coast being like, well, this is 5th edition. And we're like, okay. So there's a lot of other stuff where you're like, I don't know, but yeah.
Well, speaking of one of the other big companies out there, Paizo's out there still trucking along. And I know we had fans that always love some Paizo news. And I was looking around and I saw Pathfinder 2 they're kicking off for the rest of this year, the War of the Immortals, which is their big adventure path and some books that are coming out with lots of stuff there. It's amazing to me how much they add, not just an adventure path, but like their ancestries and their classes and things. They are not afraid to add, like D&D seems like to get a new class or to get a new race in D&D, race seems to come a little bit more easy than, you know, the other stuff.
I would say classes, they add
like,
races.
They almost never want to. No. Yeah, it seems like they don't want to. But even backgrounds, they might add in a book. There's no reason because a background has maybe three sentences that are relevant to a background, and yet in any of the books they only add one or two or three. But if you look at a Paizo game, it's like they're just adding these big heritages, ancestries, classes, you know, just they're willing to just create tons of them. And so if you're ever looking for something where you can have such a wide variety of things to mix and match and play and plug in, and you haven't gone to Pathfinder and looked at those, you know, Pathfinder 2, you're missing out.
It's funny, though, I know you didn't mean this, but almost the way you said it is like, if you want to be overwhelmed, check out Pathfinder 2. Because I'm like,
you want so many options.
That feels like it's overwhelming to me, but that's it.
That's probably true.
See that they have two new classes. Speaking of that, Pathfinder 2E just said that they have two new classes coming up for their next book. But I can't remember the names of them. I'm trying to find out what they are.
Yeah, we had the links in there. I was diving in. I'm trying to remember which ones because they had been play testing several.
The Animist maybe is one. Wisdom based, and then I can't. I don't know. I'll have to look. Oh, the Exemplar. So the Exemplar and
that
the
was
Animist.
One. Exemplar. Yeah.
So it's like kind of who knows what those are, but well, it says one's a fighter, one's a wisdom based spellcasting class, so they got that going. But but no, they're constantly making new classes, so it's really cool.
Yeah, and we were talking about in our group, we're about to end our big major campaign. We'll get to that in a little bit. So the idea is we're starting to think about what's next, what are we going to want to play, and every now and then somebody kicks out, do we want to jump to Pathfinder 2? Do we want to give it a shot? Because there's just so if you make that jump, there's so much for you to explore in what adventures are out there for you, what resource books are out there for you, what extra rules you can add. So, but the other thing I saw while perusing through their website, because I hadn't really been over there since kind of our show, we were just like on our break and doing so much stuff, but Starfinder is bringing their Mechageddon adventure path, and they're bringing in their big giant robots. And we know on this show, we love big giant robots.
We do love giant robots. I have to correct myself. I was reading an article from September 1st, 2023. So those are not the new article, the new stuff. This, the new ones are Champion and Guardian. I just wanted to put that right. Apparently the Animist and the Exemplar are already out. So, My bad.
Already play tested, ready to go.
But no, I love my big mechs very, very much. In fact, somebody in my local gaming group was running Lancer last week, and I couldn't make it because I had something else going on, and I wanted to drop everything to go play a session of Lancer and see if I like it. So,
yeah, I was just rereading that one too because I've been wanting to try to play it again.
But Mechageddon is the new one for Starfinder, and you're going to be like in mechs.
Robots. Like, yeah. So cool. Well, apparently the adventure path is you are on a planet that you are mech pilots who fight basically these kaiju, and that is the planet you start on. And you can make your characters there. You start your adventure path there, but you can eventually leave and go off into the rest of the Starfinder universe if you wish. But that's kind of where the adventure path starts, cool, as mech pilots that are fighting giant monsters to save civilization. I thought, oh, this is like, you know, Pacific Rim, let's go, yeah, you know, or Gundam, let's, yeah, go.
God, so all of that. No, that's really cool. I actually would be interested in checking that out. We were talking about you were talking about it, and then I saw another thing about it. Oh, Salvage Union. Yeah. And oh, good. Cool. You have it. Yeah. So people. Yeah,
very good.
Dave T, can't remember how to spell his last name, but he has a YouTube channel where he reviews RPGs, and he did a review of it, and I had no idea that it was basically Lancer the OSR version is Salvage Union. And I was like, oh, I'm way more interested in this because Lancer seems fun. I really liked Quinn's Quest review on Lancer, where he's like, it was really cool, yeah, but it's very like you have to have players that are so invested, kind mm-hmm. of like Pathfinder, I guess, where they have to learn the game with you. Whereas Salvage Union felt more like we kind of just pick it up and play and enjoy that. But we all know that, you know, Mecha Goons is like the top tier. You should be all playing that right now. So
you should be downloading that for sure. Yeah,
go get Mecha Goons. It's free. It's free. Jordan.itch.io. But that'll be really awesome. So I like it.
So that was our Pathfinder news. There's definitely plenty out there. I'm sure they're gearing up for what their releases are going to be at Gen Con. They're always wanting to have some cool stuff at their booth. They always have large area for what they take up, and so people can come in and buy all their stuff. So that is a Pathfinder 2. And they still are doing their revisions are done now. So they had their kind of 2E revision, and they're still working on the playtesting of the Starfinder 2E pieces. I think they're on phase 3 or 4 right now. But that feels like they're getting close to where they can finally wrap up and bring us that Starfinder 2E version, which of the games, I think Starfinder needed the most editing help to help bring players in, because the original books were a little bit all over the place. They reminded me of when we were playing Monty Cook's The Black Box.
Invisible Sun, yeah.
Invisible Sun, like we liked it, but it was a lot of, wait, we got to go to this book to look this up, and what does this mean? But then we found that in another pamphlet, and it was like...
So frustrating.
It needed was. Some editing help a little bit in there, and I think that's what Starfinder has needed too. And I think once it gets this editing help, I think it could really blow up as one of the great sci-fi role-playing games out there.
Can you play?
There's not a lot of them.
Can you play Star Wars with it? And then I think you're right. Like, if I can reskin Starfinder 2E to Star Wars, I think that's all people want. There's
lightsabers and force powers.
That's all people want with sci-fi settings, I feel. Not all people, but, like, that's the majority. Like, who knows?
If you're looking for other good sci-fi settings, Modiphius does a really good job because they have the Star Trek Adventures stuff, Coriolis, they have Aliens, they have, you know, and then Free League, because they partner with Free League quite a bit to sell products. They have a great, if they have Fallout. So if you're watching the Fallout show and I'm all of a sudden excited. I think I want to play a Fallout.
I guess they sold out.
I think that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah. Amazon released Fallout the show, and it was within a week, all of their inventory of the Fallout RPG was bought up, which is interesting enough. People were like, does that happen normally? Like the new Avatar series came out on Netflix, but like the Avatar game didn't sell overly well, you know? And I was like, I guess you're right. New episodes of Star Trek came out and the Star Trek stuff didn't overly sell. But for some reason, Fallout, like they pounded Modiphius to get Fallout. It's hit the
zeitgeist. Like, so, my wife's watching it. She really likes it. And she knows nothing about Fallout.
Yeah.
And she was interested.
Well, so. I am currently watching X-Men 97, which Fallout is on my will watch after X-Men 97 is done. So.
X-Men 97 is so good.
So good! It's so every good. Episode is so amazing. Yeah. I was like, you can't, you will not do well because my nostalgia is too high for this. And then sure enough, I'm back to being 13 watching X-Men. Yeah. Oh, it's so good. I love it.
Yep.
Yes. I have been playing Plangea 5e.
Our favorite setting. Definitely in my top.
Wasn't it great?
I play State Type 3.
Like we had David on, the creator of Plangea, just on a whim. He contacted me. He was like, "Hey, could I be on your show?" And I'm like, "I guess so. You seem nice."
Sure.
And then by the end of that episode, I'm like, "I'm backing this faster than anything. Like that sounds like the coolest setting." And they're not wrong. So I've been wanting to cover non-D&D settings for a while. And I guess it's because I'm like, I'm going to run a Plangea game. And so running a Plangea game, I've been rereading the books and I'm like, man, I should just make lore videos on this. And I contacted David and he's like, you should make lore videos on that. And I was like, okay, cool. So he was so supportive of me making videos on it. And I'm very happy that first video has been doing very well for Jordan. Like other YouTubers might be like, oh, whatever. But like that, it's doing great, especially for non Wizards of the Coast stuff. So I'm really excited to do that. I'm writing the second script right now for another Wednesday release. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm giving him free advertising, Grinar, but like he's also just a really nice guy.
We got to get him back on and ask, is he going to expand it? Because that's what I want to know too. Is he got plans to say, let's do more?
So I actually have an answer about that because I was going to work it into the video. I talked to him. So it was published by Atlas Games, and I guess right after the OGL thing happened, they were like, oh, okay, this is a little too spooky. We don't like this OGL thing. So they stepped back. And currently Atlas Games is not moving forward with any further Plangea stuff, which is kind of sad. But on the plus side, David and all of the writers started a Patreon, and they have actively been releasing stuff. So if you want, you can subscribe to the Patreon. There are new subclasses, adventures, new everything. Like he's created, he has like expanded upon the game a lot. Apparently all that stuff is there. You just have to like subscribe and then you get access to it.
He felt like when we were talking to him, like a Keith Baker type, like the guy that was just putting out more stuff.
Or like a Monty Cook. I'm just going to like keep building things. Oh, but no, it is kind of a Keith Baker. You're right. Because Keith has always supported Eberron. Like it's always in his mind. He's okay, I'm going to do this.
World. Yeah. Sure.
And that's what David feels like with Plangea. So anyway, super cool. We're actually having the wrap up of the session today. And it's so, cause I originally said, I'm like, I think it's going to be like 6 to 8 sessions and we're at that point where they're going to fight the big bad and we're going to be done. But every one of my players has told me, they're like, we're not ready to leave. Like there's other things to explore. Cause in my mind, I'm like, and then we'll play a different game. And they're just like, we want to keep playing Plangea.
We like these characters. So yeah. So and tell us like, a little bit about their characters. What characters did they choose? Roughly. Are they playing?
I've got a Hafuz monk. So he's got like big old stretchy arms. He can punch at a distance. Nice. It's really fun. We have a starling bard who glows at night. We have two dinosaur people, two saurons. One is a barbarian and one is a paladin, which the paladins are called something else. I can't remember off the top of my head. Guardians, I think. And we have a gnome rogue. And we have the human beast heart from MCDM, which actually works very, very well for Plangea, because it's all like, I'm going to tame this creature and I'm going to use it. So he's got an owlbear that runs around and it's so fun. Like, I'm so happy he's playing that character because I wanted to play a beast heart. I still do. But like, I get a pseudo live through him playing it and it's been a lot of fun.
How did you set up that first session? Because we've talked about Plangea a lot. And it's that when you set the stage for these players who've not really heard of it except for the name, and you kind of maybe describe the campaign to them. But in the book, it talks about being in the darkness, everything is dark, and it's when you see that light on the horizon, that is the only safe place there can be. How did you introduce them to the world in your first session?
Yeah, so they were all we all decided, like, do you guys want to be part of a specific clan? And they all decided to be part of the Bear Clan. So I was like, okay, we're all Bear Perfect. Clan people. And I kind of was like, here's like a day in the life, and I did like a gentle thing. But then I was like, now we're running out of food. We need you guys to go out and find a mammoth and bring back food. And so they went out as a hunting party. And when they attacked the mammoth and finally killed it, a parasite jumped out of its head and like tried to take over one of their bodies, and they killed it. So I've been doing kind of a Lovecraftian horror with my playing Gia. Everything's like, is that really who we think it is? And they've been very clever about it. So then they took the mammoth home. They got a prize because they were able to successfully get this
Bear
stuff home.
Clan. Nice.
And then another hunting party came back, and they were like, something's off about the hunting party, and all of their heads burst open and parasites came out. And so they were like, ah, so they had to kill those people. And then they're like, we need you guys, because you're familiar with this, to go west
figure
and
out
figure
happening.
Out what's happening. And so that's what they're nice. Doing. And they finally arrived at a lake, and there's something creepy going on with this lake. And so the creatures around the lake are acting weird, and they're trying to figure it out. And we're coming down to the big bad, which is going to be a weird lake monster that they call it the what is it called? The strange unknowing. It's got a very simple name, and now I can't remember it.
It's in my D&D notes.
It is the crawling
put
awful.
Him on the spot.
That's what it's
oh,
called.
Oh, that's they such call a good name.
Anything that's like Lovecraftian or Mind Flayer-esque is called the crawling awful. And so with the crawling awful, they're trying to figure out like, well, if it's coming out of this lake, how do we stop it? What do we do? It's been a lot of fun. So, and it's just that's kind of great. Been like classic D&D. A couple of my players have never played before. We're all kind of just like, okay, you know, nobody's power gaming the system because they're all kind of new. And it just reminds me of like the fun that I used to have with 5e. So,
right. That's very cool. Very cool.
And then who knows, after this, I'll have to come up with another adventure because they want to keep streaming. So,
Bear Clan needs to be stronger.
Yeah. And then I've been playing some DCC Dying Earth, which has been fun. If you've been watching the Jocular Junction channel, you can see some of those things there. I had a session zero a month ago, and then I went to Mexico for vacation. But I had session zero with some brand new friends who are the guys running a Forbidden Lands game. And I've always wanted to try Forbidden Lands. I said I would definitely want to do it. They've had one session without me because I was in Mexico, but tomorrow is my first session of Forbidden Land. So I have a goblin hunter that I'm playing who has a pet boar. And so I get to run around as a goblin with this giant pig that helps me attack.
That's very
and
cool.
I'll let you guys know next week how that was, because it should be a lot of fun if we're going to have another show next week, which I think we are. So,
yeah.
And then I've just been writing a lot. It's been fun doing YouTube stuff, reviews. But are you done with Dungeon of the Mad Mage? Is it still happening?
We are on the second to last level.
Whoa.
We're about to finish that level up. And I would think in the next session or so, we're going to make the last level of Dungeon of the Mad Mage. We're level 18 at the moment, although most of us are split class, so none of us are really 18 anything, but
but you know, together
like, I'm still
18.
Like I'm a 7 I'm like a 7/12 right now of Arcane Archer Twilight Cleric is what my character has been.
Gotcha.
And it's been fantastic. It's been at least a year and a half solid, because we went right from Dragon Heist right into Dungeon of the Mad Mage. Doing it all, learning the history, bumping into all the cool names, finding all the cool creatures. I know we've always talked to you a little bit of spoilers, but I feel like most people don't even ever finish this module, so you probably won't ever get there. We bumped into a Draco Lich, so that's super cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's something you don't normally get to bump into. It's just been really good. So it's a fun thing. We're starting to look forward to like what we might play next, but the group has been fantastic. It's definitely a dungeon delve of the most, and ours is mixed with that ACT Inc. thing. So we've been setting up little franchise offices here and there, and we've been helping the company. In fact, we just picked up a phylactery, and one of the things we were talking about doing, and we're like, well, should we send a message to Omen Drawn that we have this? Because he might give us a bonus, a corporate bonus. Or should we just destroy it, which is our other plan of just destroying it, you know, so that we can get rid of this thing. So, but, and it's, there was some Spelljammer wrapped in there in this adventure.
Yeah, I know there's a Spelljamming helm before Spelljammer was announced, was buried in there. So that's kind of cool.
So we've kind of bumped into that stuff. We bumped into some Modrons early on. I mean, demons and devils, there's been lots and lots of drow factions, lots of Duragar factions, and then lots of just weird stuff that you do. So it's been great. I think we're excited to see kind of what's next. It's the first time I've ever had a character go basically from one to, we'll hit 20, and then by the end that last level will be basically 20 level characters, and it's fun. I think it's been great and we loved it. We're a group that does like dungeon delving, though. I think if you're not a group that wants to dungeon delve a lot, you would have got bored of this quickly and then didn't want to do it. But we love the moving around and the map on Roll 20, the way the lighting works and everything, moving our characters around, very tactical and stuff. And so we've had a great time.
That's cool.
And so, yeah, we're almost done. And so we're looking forward to maybe what's next. So I don't know what we're going to play next, but there's been some ideas thrown out. Pathfinder was an idea that was thrown out. We thought about some Warhammer 40K was thrown out a little bit. And then some other people were like, oh, but we've got all these indie games that we have too. Like, I was like, I've got the Salvage Union, or I've got Lancer, you know, or I've got these other.
Well, that's how I feel
Wild
too.
Wild Sea was one of the ones I was like, oh, I've got Wild Sea.
Wild Sea looks really cool.
This would be really cool. So I don't know what we'll play yet, but I'm sure it'll be fun and I can't wait.
I have so many things to play like you that I'm always like, guys, let's just play like one six or eight sessions and then something else. Yeah. But that's the problem is I feel like the mentality is like, but I'm only level 5 or 6. I want to be level like 18.
I keep going.
And I'm like, okay, but I don't know.
Yeah. The dungeon master in me wants to jump to several games and play them all. Exactly. But the player in me wants to see how far I can take that character. What can I get? So the one thing I did see too, one thing I didn't put in a note, my very last note before we kind of wrap up the show is one of the games I love to play is from Green Ronin has their version of it, and it was Delta Green. There's a couple of different companies that have done Delta Green. Well, I had just heard the people that have done Delta Green have picked up the rights to do the Black Company book, my absolute favorite fantasy book of all times above everything else that I've read a million times now. They have gotten the rights and you're going to bring a Black Company RPG Kickstarter, I think, at some point. So when that happens, I will definitely tell everybody, because that game is the game. And I know you have some players that, I mean, you played in a game that was Black Company kind of themed. And this is the thing. I mean, Black Company, if you haven't read these books yet, you need to go to Glenn Cook, pick up the Black Company books and burn through them because they are really good.
That is what
I've been doing. Other than that, I've been doing...
From the creators of Delta Green, but it's not going to be the system of Delta Green, not necessarily.
Right, I think it's a different system.
Yeah.
I think it's a different system. The other thing I was doing, the only other thing I've been doing since had the show is I've been hell diving a lot. So we have any hell diver fans out there, but I've been keeping the galaxy safe. And I've got my shirt on today and I'm
nice
like, hell divers,
yeah. Everyone's playing that thing. I should check it out. I suppose
so fun.
Is that the next tabletop RPG they're gonna make? Hell
God, I think
RPG?
So I think so. We really should. It would be fun.
Yeah,
be really fun.
I've been playing too much Diablo 4.
Yeah, I'm surprised that's not a full-on tabletop role-playing game.
I would think
Diablo 4
edition
would be perfect for it. But it was kind of like a source book add-on.
Oh, it's
not
source
like
book
a,
for 3.
You know, it's kind of its own thing. But I feel like the world, the rules they could make a part of it, the classes you'd be able to play, I just imagine it would be very popular. I'm surprised
yeah, that you're right. Blizzard and maybe...
hasn't thrown one of their worlds out there to be a tabletop role-playing juggernaut.
Because I think there was a 30 Warcraft as well conversion. And you're right, with World of Warcraft, I'm surprised. But the fact that like Dark Souls got a game, but not Diablo is kind of odd now that you think about it. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, there's not a lot of money in tabletop when you're a multi-million dollar video game company already. But yeah, who knows? I don't know. Anyway, well, everybody, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. This has been Jordan and Lucian with the Saturday Morning RPG Show. This show is supported by generous patrons on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/Jordan, J-O-R-P-H-D-A-N. You can go to jorphdan.itch.io and check out some of the games that I'm writing. I think I'm going to throw up a rough draft of Modular G6 there soon. And by rough draft, it's like version 0.6328, like some, I don't know, not version one yet, because I don't feel like I should call it version one, but I've been making a lot of it.
It's still pre-alpha. It's not even alpha yet.
But it's like, it's been fun. It's been fun to write. So you should definitely go and follow me there and subscribe to this channel and the Jocular Junction. Or if you're listening on the podcast, subscribe to the Substack and hang out. If I should announce this, I don't think a lot of you guys, maybe you don't know this. On the Jocular Junction, I did a video on Dungeon Crawl Classics number 100. Which is a cool thing. The cool thing about that is not only did I Kickstarter Dungeon Crawl Classics 100, but Goodman Games sent me a free version. So I have a still saran wrapped version of DCC 100 that I am giving away. So if you go to that channel, go to Jocular Junction and go watch the video. There's a link at the bottom and you can subscribe, or not subscribe, but you can enter into the contest. And then I'm going to pick a winner this upcoming Friday and I'll let you guys know. So listen to that and watch it, or just go click the link. I don't know, but anyway, you could win DCC 100.
Even I could win,
even Lucian. Although I'll probably be like, hey,
you can't win.
Yeah,
it's for patrons and fans. And
I'd probably contact you and be like, listen, you won, but I don't want you to win. People are going to ask questions.
Give it to fans. Yeah.
But no, you should. It's a lot of fun. And I just mailed out a bunch of...
I'll put the link in chat.
A bunch of Jordan pins to some people that requested them. So if you... Yeah. So anyway, we'll see you guys on the Discord. Thank you guys so much for watching. And we'll be back next week with another episode of the Saturday Morning RPG Show. Take care. Bye, all.
Bye.